Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here back at it again with my very special co-host, the much-loved Joshua Siegel.
Mr. Robin Bailey, great to be back with you. And I don't know if I could be more fired up for a podcast than the one we're about to host. What a special one this is going to be.
Well, thanks to you, Josh. And Josh, by the way, always love the energy you bring. So anytime you're around to co-host a podcast, we are open to that. So on the pod today is Kirk Simpson, co-founder and CEO at Go Confirm. Thanks for doing this, Kirk.
Thanks for having me. Always great to see Josh. It's been a while.
Everybody loves Josh. So with that, Josh, you gave us the intro to Kirk so kindly. So why don't you kick us off?
Well, Kirk, thank you so much for agreeing to join us here. And it's great to see you again. I definitely missed that beautiful mug of yours. I've personally been wondering this question for a while, so I'm glad that we can do this in a podcast format and the world can hear it. By all intents and purposes, what you did at Wave was a roaring success. You supported thousands of small business owners. You ended up with one of the largest tech exits in Canadian history. I'm assuming you did relatively well financially for yourself. You've got a beautiful family. You could rest on your laurels for a while and go spend time with them and do whatever you really wanted to do. But you chose to almost immediately jump back in to the startup world. Can you share the decision-making process on what were the major factors in going back to the grind so quickly?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there was a lot of soul searching through that process. I think the driving factors were a few. The first is that, you know, you would have experienced this and been a big part of it at Wave, is that there's literally nothing like being in a room with smart, motivated people trying to tackle a hard problem. And I sort of liken that to a drug that is hard to give up. It's just something that is really fulfilling and inspiring when it happens. And I knew that we could attract really great people into this new company, be back at the really early stage, which is always fun when you've got a really small, nimble, fast-moving group of people. Secondly, I was really motivated by the challenge. It's hard to find big ideas in markets that are really yet sort of untapped. And I think decentralized identity and giving back control to people, as well as the growth in AI and generative content and what that's going to mean for a big need for better identity solutions, the opportunity to work with Peter Carisha again, like so many different factors. And then the last thing I'll say is just, you know, my kids are still relatively young, still in school every day. And so it's not like my wife and I are leaving to go live in Europe for a while. And so what vision do you want them to see about their parents? Do you want them to see you sort of playing golf every day? Or do you want them to see you in a way that is hardworking, still motivated and grinding and resilient to some of the challenges and all of those kinds of things? And I think that's the vision that my wife and I would profess to put forward rather than, as I said, somebody who's, you know, not doing that on a day-to-day basis. So a lot of different factors. Sorry for the convoluted answer.
No, it was a beautiful answer, Kirk, and I love it. I've been following closely what you're doing at Go Confirm, and it looks like you've got a dream team starting up there, solving a really, really important and hard problem, which I know is something you're deeply passionate about. You talked about soul searching in the process of leaving Wave and then starting up Go Confirm. I'm wondering if you could look to the other side of the equation where you talked about why yes. Were there any hesitations in getting back into the startup realm, knowing what you know about startup world?
I wouldn't say, knowing what I know about startup world, there were any hesitations, because I love startup world. I love the people. I love the energy. I love the desire to try and create something from nothing, you know, all of those kinds of things. I think my only hesitation, and still what I grapple with, is just, this is a cliche that's probably overused, but like, a startup is like a rocket launch, in that it is a ton of energy to just get it off the ground. And then it starts to take on, hopefully, if you can get to this point, sort of a life of its own. It has its own energy and momentum and those kinds of things. But that 0 to 1 is really, really difficult. And it just takes a level of commitment and drive and determination and all of those kinds of things. And I think potentially with age, with, to your point, the success that we had at Wave, all of those kinds of things, what I need to challenge myself is to show up every day and bring that energy and grind and determination. And sometimes, on some days, that's easier said than done, quite frankly.
Well, Kirk, I heard something in your answer that I hadn't thought I was going to ask you, but now I am definitely going to ask you, because you had said you're not off to Europe to live in Europe just yet. If you were going off to live in Europe, where would that be?
Where would it not be? I'd I think it's just a matter of, you know, at some point, just experiencing something different, right? I mean, anybody who's listening to the podcast, who's been grinding for a long time, and we've raised a family of three and all of those kinds of things, you get into habits and routines and all that kind of stuff. And the idea of breaking those habits and routines for a period of time, whether that would be in any of those European countries, would be amazing. So I would take any of them.
Josh and I talk about this and traveling, and you seem to fall in with a group of people that also has the same views in traveling. And one of Josh and our favorites is Austria and Vienna and Budapest and places like this. And I heard this saying years ago, and it was so true, and I'll butcher exactly what it is. It won't be verbatim, but, you know, travel is one of those things that we spend money on that makes you richer. And it really does. And I find that in my day-to-day experiences, when I'm chatting with someone, something will come up about somewhere they've been. And when you can connect on that, all of a sudden the relationship goes so much deeper. So right. We'll chat afterwards, because my wife and I have a bit of a plan for what we're going to, at least part of the year, to be doing once we're done. But I want to go back to dive a little bit deeper into what you did at Wave, because obviously Josh has a bit of a benefit and knew you and worked with you there. But I would imagine running a very large company like that is very different than going back to startup. And I look back at my own journey of starting the company, which was very hard in the first few years. And I'm not sure that I'd want to go back to the starting line again, because it's fundamentally different, right? Going back to that starting point where you don't have all the infrastructure in place. For you, Kirk, what's been the hardest part about that transition?
I think my mindset right now is a little bit different than that, in that I find all of it refreshing, actually. I'll tell you why. I think for those that aren't familiar with the journey, we started Wave in 2009, got serious about it in 2010, raised a whole bunch of VC money, sort of had the rocket ship. Then we found that the rocket ship was leaking a lot of fuel. And so we had some really, really tough, difficult years. And then we found momentum again. And then 2019 comes along, we sell it to H&R Block in a really successful transaction. The leadership, Jeff and Tony at H&R Block, their view is, you know, this thing's working. Let's keep driving. We'll leave you on your own. We'll support different initiatives if we can, but just keep doing your thing, keep growing. We end up growing the business to $100 million of revenue a year when I left. But after you've done essentially a marathon to get it to the acquisition, you're then sort of asked to keep running. And those next 3 years for all of us were very different, in that, you know, you need to change the playbook of how you motivate people. You need to change the playbook on how you recruit people. You need to change the playbook on how you retain people. Then COVID comes along. Then a culture that was very focused on bringing people together and having people collaborate, and the energy that comes from that and celebrating that, then has to move to a work from home type of environment during COVID. We've got a crazy 2021-22 era of very difficult to retain talent, because the job market is going crazy, salaries are driving up, all of those kinds of things. And I would just say that as a founder or in my case, a co-founder at that point who was on a plan to stay for a certain period of time, your energy level starts to drop a little bit. You have more and more challenges. The organization is close to 400 people. Pace of innovation is slowing down. Number of meetings is going up. And one can argue with the different approaches that Shopify has taken to some problems. But one of the things that I highly, highly respect, and you can see why founder-led companies continue to innovate and drive, is because despite all of the success, Toby is still making radical changes within the company about how they work. Because a level of just sort of momentum gets lost as you get older, have more success, have more people, all of those kinds of things. And you've got to fight that momentum with everything you've got to try and keep that culture of innovation and pace and quality and all of those kinds of things. And so to go back to, you know, 10 people who are all highly motivated, who take one meeting to sort of get aligned versus, you know, 25 meetings has been very refreshing for me. So to be honest, I don't miss any of that right now. I'm really inspired by the size and the stage that we're at.
I'm glad to hear that. And it's very infectious in a good way, I will say that, to chat with people like yourself, because the motivation comes through in our conversation. I do want to go back to something that I've never asked somebody in your position, and I've always been curious about it. When an acquisition is happening, and you're going back to the employees and they might be thinking, oh, what? How does this affect me? And usually when, for people who are listening, when an acquisition happens, usually the founders or the leadership are asked to stay on for a certain amount of time during an earnout period, whatever it happens to be. How do you manage that corporate culture and the fears that might be with the employees knowing, okay, an acquisition's happened, Kirk's only here, and he's been the person why I've been at this company, and maybe not just yourself, but other founders. How do you manage how those people feel about, well, Kirk's going to be gone from this one day? What does this mean for me? Because I would imagine that would change things.
Well, let me go back in time quickly to tell you. So in the beginning of, or end of 2018, beginning of 2019, we had done an exercise to talk about what is the vision for the company for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years and what's possible. And the goal of that was really to cement our views on where we were going, why, and what it would mean and what we could achieve and set high goals for ourselves. But the second was to present it to the company and sort of rally them around a vision of what was possible if we all sort of banded together to do this. And so in late March, when HRB approached me, and then for the next couple of months, as we were thinking about the deal and then ultimately finalizing the deal, the day that the deal was going to be announced, we held an all hands meeting at 8:30 in the morning. And in a tech company, you never hold an all hands meeting at 8:30 in the morning because no one's there. So, you know, we needed to send out the invite the night before. And I will never forget walking from my house to the office that morning of that town hall, feeling absolutely terrified of telling the company. And the reason for that was I felt very inauthentic that I had presented this vision about what was possible and then had taken this exit and thought that people would view me badly and all of those kinds of things. And so I was really, really terrified and walked down, had the conversation, and was amazed by the reaction. Now, part of that, and the beauty of a tech company oftentimes, is that a lot of people owned part of the company. And so there was a really nice return for the amount of work that they had put in. But to your point, the next phase of that, once the honeymoon sort of wears off a little bit, you know, we had a great exit party that was super fun and all of those kinds of things. But the day after and the day after that, you know, it starts to sink into people. Okay, part of why I was here was to be on this rocket ship, to own part of the company, to hopefully drive this to an IPO, all of those kinds of things. And that's why I mentioned before, everything has to change. The conversation about what does compensation look like and how are we going to change that? And how can you still feel ownership? We had to have conversations with HRB about, listen, I know this is not how you do things, but this is within our culture for them to feel some level of ownership. How are we going to mimic that within your structure? And then I think I was never public because I didn't know how long I was going to stay for. But during that time, I was more cognizant of really trying to raise the voice of others within the organization such that it wasn't just about me. It was never about me anyways, but it would hopefully become less about me and more about the work that we were trying to do, the customers we were serving, the people within the company at all levels that were great to work with, et cetera. And I think that really became a big part of the focus. And Josh, keep me honest about what it felt like on the other side, because, you know, I could believe my own hype too much there.
So keep in mind, I joined almost immediately after
the
acquisition. So I was consulting with you and Ashira before the acquisition to work through some of the comms, team structure, all of that stuff. But I got to see the aftermath. So I joined literally weeks after the party celebrating the exit. And certainly there was rumblings and people were a little bit concerned. But what I can say, the communication from the executive team during that time was spectacular and consistent and constant, which during times of change, during times of uncertainty, you need. And Kirk, kudos to you and the Wave leadership team at the time. You did a phenomenal job of talking the talk and walking the talk at the same time. It was a great strategy.
I appreciate you sharing that too, because again, I've been curious about it for a long time with people that, you know, we're 186 episodes in and I've never asked that question of anybody. And I know just based on our audience, there are people who are working toward that. And they're probably wondering, hey, when I get to that point, how do I do that? Because I would imagine you walking in at 8:30 that morning, walking to work, that must have been so nerve-wracking. And like you said, luckily there are some wins in it for your employees because there's some ownership, but there's going to be fears that people are facing. So I'm very glad, you know, we named this podcast Success Leaves Clues. And I think you just dropped a bunch of clues for everybody. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, let me tell you one quick story that is potentially going to make me look bad, but I'll tell it anyways. So after the acquisition, I had always, since I was a young boy, wanted a Targa Porsche. And I struggled with the decision for a long time about whether or not I would buy one. And ultimately, I decided to buy one. And I remember having a conversation with Ashira at the time. And I said, I really am uncertain about whether or not I want to park this in my parking spot because people walk by and see the car.
Yep.
And I don't know if I want to be that guy. And Ashira said to me something I'll never forget. She said, the most powerful thing that you can do is park the car there and show that hard work does pay off and then show up the exact same way that you did before you had the car.
Oh, I love that.
And so again, it's kind of like a little bit of a story that I wouldn't usually share in terms of, you know, admitting it publicly, but it's just an interesting thing, right? Because it just goes to show like things change through that process and how you navigate it is really challenging.
Kirk, I think anybody listening to this podcast is going to get the sense that you are a deeply human-centric leader. Having worked with you for 3+ years, I can 100% validate that. So as you build Go Confirm and you think about the foundations of the culture that you're putting in place right now, what are you thinking about? What did you learn from Wave? What are you doing differently? Help us understand what that nugget of culture at Go Confirm looks like today.
Yeah, I would say a few things. First is I'm learning what I don't know about a oftentimes, you know, sort of hybrid remote world at the early stage, right? We've got someone in London, England, who's amazing. We've got another person in Halifax, who's incredible. And so in the very early stage of a 10-person company, that can lead to challenges. And I would say that I am definitely still on the learning curve of best practices around, you know, how to handle that. And I think listening to some of the folks that work at the company that have had success in remote environments and trying to learn what worked well about it, what didn't, how do we continue to sort of learn and adapt and get better has been humbling and really interesting to sort of learn the good and the bad about it. But I do think that the core fundamentals stay the same. And for me, the core fundamental is something I learned in the first job I ever had with when I was coming out of my first failed startup. This woman, Carolyn Meacher, hired me and she did the most unbelievable job of investing in me, empowering me, giving me rope to learn how to do things on the fly, gentle corrections along the way to get better. And I would just say that model of how she made me feel in the job and how I felt like I could lean into the best aspects of what I could bring has really been the model of what I've tried to sort of bring. And I'm trying to do that again with Go Confirm. Is just, you know, we've got some amazing people and I just want to empower them. And again, with gentle real-time sort of feedback on where I think they can be better and where they can more lean into, you know, their skills, et cetera. And I think that is the fundamental piece that is the most important to me.
I love that. So Kirk, obviously you're spending a ton of time thinking about culture, people, empowerment. As a tech founder, obviously there's a bunch of different types of founders. Where else are you spending most of your time from a professional perspective as you build this new entity?
I think there's two aspects. One is by being in the ecosystem for a long time, I've got a pretty good network. And so trying to leverage that network first for fundraising, second for hiring, and then third for ideas, inspiration, connections, all of those kinds of things is something that I think I can uniquely bring that I want to lean into. And then the second is just around product and go-to-market and positioning and those kinds of things. I've seen a lot both at Wave and with other companies that I'm involved with from an angel perspective or an advising perspective, or just things that I see in everyday life where I think we can be better and just leaning into those aspects. But again, this is where the one thing I'd say is when you hire great people, which we have, I mean, sometimes I'm just like, I'm going to stay out of the way right now because they're better at this than I am. And I don't need to micromanage this process. I should stay out of it. The results will be better if I stay out of it and let them bring their expertise to these challenges. And so that's part of it too, is knowing when to just remove yourself and let them run.
Love it.
I love that sentiment too. And I finally, we can chat about this after with my own company. I finally feel I'm at the point where now all I need to do is get out of the way.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, it is a great feeling. And I can do more of this and get to meet people and expand networks as you were chatting about. I want to talk about your LinkedIn profile. Because of course, anytime I meet someone, Josh gives me an introduction. I go, okay, Kirk, let's see what Kirk's all about. And it says on there, entrepreneur, husband, father, friend, Canadian. And we're talking about being an entrepreneur here. You know, you exited at one company, you're starting another, which you're clearly passionate about. But it's not easy. Running a business is not easy, or starting a business and trying to get to, it's a lot of work. How do you balance those roles that are obviously, you put them on LinkedIn, clearly really important to you with the hard work it takes to be running a company?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for me, there's been two aspects. One is understanding that there are going to be periods of intense commitment required. My family and I were just talking last night, in fact, about a trip we had gone on at March break. I had promised my family, this was in 2015, for a while that we would go on a trip at March break. And it just happened to coincide with one of the most challenging times of Wave. And that trip was like crazy for me, like so stressful and terrible. And it was the one time that my wife looked at me and said, okay, have we had enough? Like, is this enough? But it just goes to show there's just, I think we've just all got to realize there's going to be some times where we've just got to lean in and that's got to be the priority. And then there are some times where post a fundraise, as an example, once that craziness had died down, it was time to just breathe and regroup, recenter yourself, you know, get to the basketball game for your kids, drop them off at school, all of those kinds of things. And that's okay. And to me, one of the things that, like, I don't believe in the whole hustle porn movement and all those kinds of stuff, but I do believe that sometimes, like, life is hard and we need to lean in. And it's okay for our family to see and our kids to see that sometimes you just got to grind and you got to be resilient and you got to get through that period. So that's the first, is just understanding there's going to be usually ebbs and flows. And, you know, I just wasn't in that situation where it was always on all the time. And so that maybe there are people that have to be in that situation. I wasn't, so I can't speak to that. But for me, it was being okay with the times that I had to lean in and then trying to be extra present in the times that I wasn't. And then the second, and maybe Josh would have seen some of this, or maybe it was earlier days, but I also think we kind of leaned in a little bit to being a bit of an older tech company because James and I, my co-founder and I, were a little bit older when we started it. We had families. And so my kids and I would go into the office sometimes, or we'd bring them in on a Saturday and we'd walk around and play ping pong in the games room or that kind of stuff. So they felt a little bit more connected to what I was doing there. And so I think they kind of felt like it was part of them too. And I think bringing those worlds together a little bit helps as well so that they can see what this is all about.
You just brought back some really nice memories for me because my dad, who's passed away now, used to bring me into his office. Insurance has been in our family for, you know, I'm second generation. And I remember going to my dad, and you're right, I felt connected to that business and what he did because he owned his own business since I can remember, 4 years old, scooting around on the office chairs because that was a lot of fun. And I remember having soccer games and dad wasn't there, but mom was.
Yeah.
Because I knew dad was out working.
Right.
And it sounds like your family's very similar to that. So very supportive of that. This has been fantastic chatting with you. Josh and I do have one more question. It's the first time we've ever asked this on the podcast. So Josh, I'm going to let you take it away because I think this could get interesting, especially with Kirk.
I love it. So Kirk, there's many people out there that view tech founders almost as like mythical beings. But when push comes to shove, and obviously we've shared beers and tequila shots, you're a guy, you're a human. So I'd love to know, human to human, for everyone that's listening today, what does just a perfect Tuesday look like for Kirk Simpson?
Wow. Okay. Well, it's clear that I wasn't given this question in advance or else I would probably have a better answer. But first, I do think it's important to me. I'm on sort of a mission to sort of demystify tech startup entrepreneurs in that the culture has, to your point, really sort of romanticized all of it. And I would just say to most people, you need to be a little bit psychologically insane to want to do it. And so it does come at a big cost and it's not all that great most of the time. And so be careful what you wish for. Perfect Tuesday, I'd probably drop off my kids to school and have those little moments. I would definitely exercise. That's something that I gave up for a period of time. And my wife kept telling me, like, you're going to feel better if you do it. And I was like, I can't make the time. And then once you hit that point where you make the leap, and Josh, I haven't been in boxing matches, but, you know, just doing more of those kinds of things, you know, it just unlocks a lot of energy and a feeling of well-being. And so I think it's really, really important. And then being with the team around a challenging problem and just watching and witnessing people bring innovative ideas, just like it just lights me up and gets the juices flowing. And then a dinner with my family and my wife, that's pretty typical, you know, it's kind of boring, but that's probably a typical Tuesday that feels right.
Let me throw a quick follow-up fitness regimen for Kirk Simpson. What are you doing to stay fit nowadays?
So I've fallen into the old person syndrome of playing pickleball. I do love pickleball.
Love it.
Like, I'm highly competitive and I love that. So I play pickleball, play squash, swim, do classes, was boxing for a little bit, but never in a ring. Just, I find I love to play sports. I love the competitive outlet. And then I like varied workouts that just, I definitely have a little bit of ADD. And so like something different, something pushing, and oftentimes as much as possible, something competitive is kind of where my go-to.
Love it.
Sounds like a pretty good Tuesday to me.
Yeah.
I'm down for that Tuesday. Yeah, that's just about right for me as well. Well, that does it for today's episode. I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, I hope that you did too. If you have any questions for Josh and myself, not Al this time, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation. But before we go, Kirk, I love how you shared your story. People want to reach out to you or find out what you're doing at Go Confirm. How do they reach you? What's the best way?
Well, first, go to goconfirm.com and let us know what you think of the product and what we're trying to solve. And I would be remiss not to put in a plug for, we've got a new product called Scam Spotter, where you can take a screen grab of an email or a text message that you've got that you're not sure is real and check its authenticity. It is very cool. And in a time when we're getting more and more of those, it can be super helpful. And then as you had mentioned, you can find me on LinkedIn.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much for doing this, Josh. As always, wonderful co-hosting with you. Remember, folks, as we've seen here today, success leaves clues, my friends. See you next time.